Hey, Danger Dan Jurz here with a quick announcement. Our next interstitial bonus content will be Daniel's Power Rangers mini campaign, and it will be the final one before the start of Season 2 officially begins. It's a soft Season 1 epilogue slash side story that will be releasing exclusively on Patreon, with its first episode dropping Wednesday, May 27th. Stick around after the episode to hear a sneak preview. More details about Season 2 will be coming soon, so keep an ear out and enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to Table Talk, a show where I chat with other creators in the TTRPG space about how they run their tables. I'm Danger Dan Jurz, the GM and host of D&D Dark, and joining us at the table today is an improviser, writer, and GM who is also the creator of the TTRPG sleepaway camp for adults, Dungeons and Cabins, Sammy Glicker. Hello!
Hi! So good to talk with you again.
Yeah, thank you so much for agreeing to be here and chit-chat with me. To get us started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your history with the TTRPG community, and, of course, about Dungeons & Cabins?
Sure. I mean, yeah, like you said, I'm a writer and I'm an improviser. I play D&D. I also play video games. I host really silly parties, the most recent of which I had a mayonnaise taste testing party and a pickle party. Yeah, I know. We could spend a whole nother hour on those, but I like doing, you know, creative things that just pop up into my brain. I think it's the improviser and writer half of me. And that's kind of how Dungeons & Cabins came about. I've been playing D&D for maybe pushing 6 years now, which some people would say is a lot and some people wouldn't. And I also think that time, you know, doesn't totally matter a whole lot. But I had the idea of, what if we had a summer camp where you could play D&D, but what if what you did at camp affected what happens in your game? Archery is such a typical summer camp thing. What if that affected your stats? What if that made you more competitive and brought you together as a team, and you're kind of now immersing yourself into these two worlds completely headfirst? And I sat on it for a while and my friend was like, when are you going to do that? And I was like, okay, fine. I'm going to commit to it without fully knowing the full extent of starting a business. And thank goodness I didn't, because I don't know if it would have ever gotten off the ground. And now it exists and it is so fun.
That sounds about right. And having been to this last year for the 2025 season of Dungeons & Cabins, it was an absolute blast. And the fusion of mountainside sleepaway camp activities with the table is a really unique vibe. When you're putting something like that together, and with that particular fusion and combination of things, how much does that factor into planning the actual, like, at-the-table campaign, integrating those kinds of activities?
Honestly, not a whole lot. The story is king or queen. I want to make sure that it shines through, and then I find ways to incorporate the camp elements into that main storyline. I don't want to sacrifice story bits to do an archery gag, you know? And because we have that freedom, what happens at camp is really flexible, and we can be really creative with how we tie that into the story and when. And it is not to say it doesn't affect it at all, because we're doing timetables. You know, breakfast is when breakfast is. Lunch is when lunch is. Like, there are certain things that we just can't move, either for practicality reasons or because we would never get away from the table. We have to have timetables. And so that 100% affects the story line, like the story beats. And then when those camp activities happen, you know, if we're at summer camp, we want to be outside during the day. So if we're going to incorporate these other activity elements, we know roughly when in the storyline they'll come into play. And so they're not the first thought, but they are definitely in the planning of the story. But storyline comes first.
That makes total sense. And especially, I imagine the venue itself also factors in quite a lot in how everything was able to be incorporated. Like, for this particular year, for instance, was at Pali Retreat, and we were not the only group there at the time. We were sharing the space with several other groups. So I imagine you were quite a bit dependent on the timetable provided to you by the venue for what was available when, to try to work around that and get as much of what you envisioned in as possible.
Yeah, Pali has been a really great partner for us. It is a huge, I mean, I don't know if you've explored all of it, but that site is huge.
It's pretty big.
We've actually never had a conflict event-wise. If we want to do archery, I mean, there are so many places to do archery there or to do zip. Like, they're always able to accommodate us when we want to do stuff. But you're right. For instance, things like lunch. that's their kitchens and their chefs, and they're telling us when we can eat. So there are things that they have planned in place that we cannot move around.
Stepping aside from the table for a second to like the actual logistical structuring of a business venture like this, what kind of aspects did you have in mind from the outset that were important to you to get right? And what stuff kind of came up as a surprise that you hadn't anticipated in the process of forming the business plan for it and actually putting the rubber to the road for it?
Yeah, this is such a funny question because the initial vision for it was the full blown, like, I want what you do at camp to affect what happens. I want you to go and find magic items on a hiking trail that are going to affect you in the game. Like, all of that was part of the initial plan. And because of that, people who know me well know this about me. I need every detail to be right. There was a typo on one of the cards, and for the next weekend, it was fixed. I was like, I can't have that. I saw it and I was like, is there a way that I can fix this now at camp before opening ceremonies? And, you know, I'm looking at every detail. The shirts for this year were printed, I will say, wrong.
Oh.
Were they printed to specs? Yes. Did I hate them? Yes. They were printed digitally. And I was like, this must be screen printed. Because last year, I want the screen print quality. That's what I got last year. I don't know why it printed different this year. And I was like, I need a reorder. It has to be right. Because it doesn't happen anymore. But that part of that is not surprising to me about how neurotic I was about every detail. Some of the things that did surprise me were, like, you know, I'm putting parties together of people who don't know each other.
Mm-hmm.
Some people come in pairs. A lot of people come alone. A lot of people fly across the country to meet friends for the first time and have a summer camp experience. And that is exactly what I want to give them. I want them to create memories that will last for a lifetime. I want them to have a full campaign packed into a weekend. I want them to create these memories that, like, a lot of our campers didn't go to summer camp. And I want them to walk away going, oh, I get it now. I get why people love camp. I get why they go back every year. And that aspect, I'd say, like, I try to plan for it as much as I can, but I just don't know everyone I'm placing. So I ask questions at registration. I say, what's your play style? What is your experience? And depending on what they tell me, I try to fit people together the best I can. And then I would say that leads to, like, what surprises me the most is how well these parties click. There's so much gel that happens. Like, it feels like the sand party was meant to be together. The fire party was meant to be together. There's just so much community that forms instantly, these like instant camp bonds. And that is the ultimate goal, right? It's like creating this community. Games are being played in between camp. There's meetups happening in between camp that I don't think I necessarily expected or planned for. And that is like my North Star has shifted to, you know, lifetime memories with these people we see every year, with this community that we're growing together. Like, this is such an us thing.
That's fantastic. And with it being so early on in its life cycle, this was only the second year of your doing this. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, you're correct. Yeah, we expanded this year, we had two weekends. And so in the first weekend, we had about a third of our year one campers return. There were some returning campers and they were showing the new campers the way. And like, it was like exactly that summer camp feeling of like, oh my God, my friends. Oh, we're back. Like, it was very cool. And I'm really excited for that feeling again next year.
Yeah. If you don't mind my asking, what sorts of logistical plans do you have in place for future years? As you've learned from the first year or two, what adjustments are you making? Do you have plans to expand out to have more weeks of it? Are you planning on having like bigger parties? It felt to me like the amount of people that we had was kind of exactly the right group, which for our group, it was six parties of six players with a DM for each party and then a few assistant counselors, which you call NPCs.
And they call themselves that proudly too, for the record. They do like that title. I totally agree. Actually, I think that this number is the sweet spot. It's just enough that you feel like, you know, we're at camp, there's so many people here, but it's not enough that you can't learn everybody's name by the end of it. You know, six parties of six feels really good. It's expanded a little bit from last year. And so, yeah, what we did this time was expand a weekend. That's one way to do it, where we just kind of keep expanding weekends, but all of us DMs have other jobs. I think, you know, an ultimate goal would be to expand locations.
Okay.
We have so many West Coasters, we have so many Pacific Northwesters. Pacific Northwesterners, I missed a syllable, but you know, like in weekend one, we had a few Australians. So there's something to be said for maybe expanding to other parts of the country, because I think that, you know, summer camps happen all over the place. And I think that there's space for it. So in an ideal world, I would love to expand geographically.
That would be very cool to see. I know it's a huge ask, so, but I very much admire the scope of what it is that you're doing and all of the thoughtfulness that goes into it. I similarly am an extremely particular person when it comes to my projects and the events that I put on and things that I put together. So there's a lot about D&C that I really admire. When you're approaching doing an event like that for those disparate groups that are running simultaneously doing sort of a West Marches style campaign, what experience were you bringing and pulling from? Have you done stuff like that at conventions? Were you pulling from the wisdom of the other GMs that you were involving? What kind of things goes into planning something at that scale for that like disparate of parties?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's something I'd only run a couple times before year one. And actually, it's an epic. West Marches is one thing, but technically this is an epic. It's a multi-tabletop event where what happens at your table affects what happens at other tables. And a lot of the time these epics are huge raids. You're all raiding a castle and, you know, this set of tables over here is going through the front and this side is scaling the walls and the other side is going under the moat. I don't know. But they're all kind of doing something, working towards the same shared goal. I would say typically in a convention or a game store setting. And so I've been running games with West Coast Adventurers Guild. We run at Comic-Con and WonderCon. They run at a lot of other places, but I run the places I can drive to. And at the end of those nights, on Friday nights and Saturday nights, depending on which ones, they run huge epics. And that was my first real experience with them. And so for year one, I was like, I know that's what I want it to be. I know I want all the tables to affect other tables. I know this is an epic. Which, you know, who named it? I don't know, but it is kind of a very confusing term because we all want like an epic campaign, you know, but this is slightly different where I describe it as all the parties were starting at different corners of the map and we're all working our way inward toward that one final goal, that big finale finish. And year one, I had a vision for certain epic style mechanics I wanted. I know I want some DM shifting because I want things that you can't do at your home game. We're all here together in the same room playing the same game. We've got to take advantage of that while we're here. And so I had things in mind I wanted. And then I was talking to James Hake and I was like, bear with me. This is going to sound crazy, but this is what I want to happen. And they're like, okay, hold on. I don't have a ton of experience with that specifically. Let's call Sean Merwin. And I was like, what? Like, I mean, this is a man who like writes these things. And so I got a couple of his epics and I got a couple epics. I ran one from Will Doyle this year at Comic-Con. And it's like taking inspiration from everywhere I can because epic mechanics are different than home game mechanics. Like it is table to table. There's situations where players might leave your table and go to another table. And so it's learning a lot of new things and, you know, taking what you know and extrapolating a little bit and then leaving room for a lot of chance.
Yeah, it was a pretty massive undertaking as far as like what the scale of the campaign was. It was broken down to 5 sessions structurally, with the last 2 being everybody coming together for a big, what really felt like an MMORPG raid, like you said. Uh-huh. And I loved how experimental it was with a lot of the things, like the rotating GMs. That was a huge highlight for me. Was it was very cool being able to get an insight into, oh, this must be what this table's experience was like this week. I've got kind of a window into this table played with more of this style. This table had these sensibilities. And so getting a little taste of how everybody was approaching their week was such a cool thing and a very neat experience. And it's awesome trying to see. I couldn't help but think the whole time about the logistics of throwing something together like that. So in the like intertable communication to get this epic style campaign, what are some of the behind the scenes bits and pieces for how that's possible in sharing information? At what point do the other GMs get involved with the story structure? Were they brought in early on and contributed to the wider scope of things? Were they brought in fairly late and just kind of running and improvising with the punches and you adjusting in real time? Where does everybody else factor into that? And how does that like table-to-table communication work?
That's an interesting question. So Last year, I wrote it all down so everybody would have a very clear blueprint of exactly what we're doing and exactly when. And every DM I have, one, I trust implicitly. They're all unbelievable DMs. We always, when we're talking about the story, we always describe it as a house. And they can change the wallpaper. They can paint the walls. They can break a table. That's totally fine. They can do whatever they want in their rooms. They know which pillars are load-bearing. There are certain things like, hey, don't break a hole in an outside wall. You know what I mean? Like there are certain things that could break the game. I mean, I don't know if they can really break the game, but they have a lot of freedom within the structure and the story we've provided them. Like we're handing them, you know, a PDF mod. But this year was a little different. This year I went to James and I said, this is my vision. I want it to start here and I want it to end here. And I want some of these mechanics in the end. And I have these like this goal in mind for the six parties to do. And then I worked with them to kind of fill in the blanks. What kind of wood are we using in this house? How are we filling in the foundation here? And they took part of it and I took part of it. And we kind of wrote things and came together and said, okay, well, this room needs to match this room because of these reasons. And so kind of making those pieces string together. And then we brought it to the other DMs and said, all right, this is the big vision. And we have a big DM meeting because I think it's easier to, like me running at conventions, I might be running five games in a weekend, not five sessions. I mean, five different games and it's four sessions a day. And it's a lot of information to take in. And I find it easy. Just tell me, tell me out loud, like, what is the beginning? What is the end? What is the kind of overarching story arc? And then I can go, oh, got it. And it's so much easier to put those shoes on and to go just walk with them. And these DMs, so we have a big DM meeting and we talk about what is the storyline? What is everyone's part? And they ask questions and then we go, oh, actually, that's a great idea. Okay, cool, cool. Let's add that somewhere. And they get the mod. And then again, like, they are going to paint the room how they want. They can interior decorate how they want. They can break the tables and move things around how they want to. So everybody definitely, like, their fingerprints are all over their storylines and their parts, but it is largely the D&C vision that they are bringing to life.
That makes a lot of sense. And especially with something this intricate and involved, that there would need to be a lot of structure in advance. And so much is subject to change, not even necessarily just GM to GM, but table to table.
And to that point, yeah, we want campers to talk to each other. We want them to share what happened in their sessions. And so to that point, we do hide everybody's adventure in other people's adventures. And so, for instance, year one, we heard campers were like, oh, yeah, did you find the girl? She was kidnapped. And they're like, we didn't have a girl. We had to go deal with these hags in this backyard. And they're like, oh, yeah, no, our girl was like having nightmares and our parents were having nightmares. And then she got kidnapped. And then the party was like, wait, nightmares? Well, our hag, do you think it was a night hag that took her? And they're like taking pieces from each other's story and putting them together. And we're like, yes, yes. And that's why, like, so far we've been keeping the story to the chest so that we can plant each other's seeds in the other story so that they can talk and then conspire and put things together on their own. And that is kind of the ultimate goal, is like, yes, talk to each other organically at summer camp.
That was a very fun aspect of the campaign and the week and structure of the event. It was a lot of fun to kind of piece together, okay, so this table was going on a rescue mission for this NPC. This table was going after this artifact. This table was going after an information finding thing. And like to piece out different aspects of this larger whole. I know there was a little bit of like hesitation at first for like, okay, what should we and shouldn't we share? But for me, as soon as the cork was off and everybody was like freely info dumping about their unique sessions, that was some of the most fun I had in interacting with the other groups. And there was so much interesting cross-party collaboration. I know to bring our week in particular to highlight a couple of specific incidents, there was a mechanic that was part of the camp thing of making friendship bracelets where you could message cantrip one bracelet to another. And a couple of parties had the idea of, if we mass produce these and have one person from each party have them, then we can all interconnectedly have like a whisper network where we can signal and message each other throughout the game, table to table, and share as a collective everything that was happening. And there was a lot of opportunities in the camp events for getting magic items and getting certain buffs, that there was some fun collaboration for figuring out how to share and bring like the larger group collective to a whole. In terms of the balance of party identity versus camp identity, where do you feel the optimal balance of that should lie? Because it was kind of fun having the unique party identity and growing closer as a tight-knit unit there, but it was also an absolute blast kind of blurring and melding the party lines and doing that sort of collaboration with the other groups involved.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's, you know, you are in a party, but you're also part of the Torchbearers Guild. You know, like you go back to the guild at night or whenever the story kind of allowed, and you would share this information naturally. You would have your guildmaster share with you what she's learned from other parties. You are part of camp. You know, this is summer camp. All the returning campers from last year got shifted party-wise. They are collecting their fire, snow, sand, ocean gauntlet. You know, like they're going to collect all the things. And so I really want you to have your party pride. We're doing the color wars and you're competing with your party. But, you know, the bigger picture, like, can you also take a step back and, you know, relate to the bigger group? Because yeah, those kind of things that are designed on purpose, the BFF bracelets that let you talk to other people. And I remember people discording me on the side and they're like, hey, can we do this in between parties? And I was like, that's up to you. If you want to go for it, go try it at least. Like, oh, what a joy when people are like making friends outside of their party. You guys had, I think you had the Bardy party.
Yeah, there's all of the bards across all of the different parties got together to try to do a big guild-wide bardic inspiration performance for everyone for the finale. And that was very sweet. And it was a really fun idea. And I like that kind of, I tend to enjoy collaboration and cooperation more than I do competition. So for me personally, stuff like that really is a treat to see when it happens.
100%. Like, we keep the party versus party in real life. It's tug of war in real life, but in the game, like, collaboration is king. I played checkers with my husband the other day and got mad because I lost. Like, if you're competitive and you lose, it's not fun. So I try to seek out collaborative games because, you know, more brains are more fun than one.
Absolutely. To that end, in terms of the like outside of camp games, I want to know if camp has shaped how you approach the table in general. Have you learned anything from the experience of running Dungeons and Cabins that has shaped and changed how you approach home games or convention games? And vice versa, are there any unique experiences that you've brought to Dungeons and Cabins from your previous tabletop experience or your improv work or your writing work that is like a unique lens that you've funneled things through? So like, to what extent has your life impacted camp and camp impacted your life?
I would say my life impacts camp a lot more than camp impacts my life. When you're playing a home game, I feel like that is the tip top. You know, if my home games, they last a long time. And so you're with people that you've known for so long and you have inside jokes and you know their characters so well, and you know those role play moments are going to be so sweet. And that is actually what I try to bring into my convention games or into camp. It's my home game that's influencing my camp game. At camp, we only have a couple days to become best friends. I need to know everybody's character inside and out. I want to know what's going to hurt them. I want to know what they're looking for. I want to know what's going to make them feel like heroes at the end of this thing. I want to know the little things I do at home that I can bring to make it feel special and memorable and not just like a convention game. Like some convention games, it's a quick little thing. Sometimes they're a little longer and you can have these really incredible games at a convention with people you've just met. That's like my North Star, I think. And I think a lot of that is role play. This year I went to Gen Con and ran the Marvel Multiverse game for the first time at a convention. And I loved it. It's just this instant, like, you know the Marvel characters. And so you know the relationships they have with each other. And you start off the game feeling like a party that's been together forever. And those are the games that's like, it feels so good. It feels so rewarding. At the end of it, I mean, even during it, like it's just so natural. And so all of these, like my improv, like that, I teach improv at camp. I teach improv at work. It's such a skill that you can bring everywhere to make every situation better. Like that sounds crazy and dramatic, but I truly believe it's real. We used to play volleyball with my comedy theater and it makes you a better volleyball player, like beach volleyball, because
yeah, that makes sense.
You know, if you're hesitating for the joke, you've missed your timing. If you hesitate for the ball, yeah, it's gone. And so these principles are the same. And so everything I do in life affects camp for sure. And I would say even vice versa, like going back to a pickle party or a mayonnaise party, you know, at camp, we have a very strong opening and we have a very strong closing. Like there are certain elements from camp that I bring into hosting now. It's like, what is the intention of bringing people over? How do I want them to feel? How do I start the night so that everyone's in the same headspace? Is there kind of a finale or does it just fizzle out and you leave like, you know, okay, I guess it's getting late. Everyone should get out now. Like I want it to be intentional. And so camp does affect my life, but I would say really I'm trying to bring that life feeling to camp.
There's like three or four different things that I want to unpack from that answer there. So going kind of in reverse order, starting with the importance of improv, that is something that is very important to me specifically in my philosophy with the table and that I really try to bring to everything. I love the lessons learned from doing improv, the emphasis on taking risks, making bold swings, not being afraid of failure, and improv generally making you a better listener, I think, is such a critical, crucial aspect, not just in TTRPGs, but like you've said, in life as a skill that really affects everything. You do like corporate improv workshops, correct?
I do. And yeah, a couple of the things that are so important in improv, like you kind of touched on it, is like the fear of failure. And in improv, there's no concept of failure. You can't say you messed up in a scene because it doesn't make sense to say that. It's such a gift when you say something like air quote wrong because you would have never gotten there otherwise. Like, oh, what a gift you've given us by mislabeling this thing. And now, well, who are you now? What do you mean? Have you been lying to me the whole time? Are you two different people? Like it just kind of creates, if that's true, what else is true?
The element of surprise that brings is always a delight. And it's such a great mindset to approach any kind of problem-solving endeavor in that way. Other sorts of things that I want to unpack a little bit too, the sort of unique approach that each GM takes to their different tables, I think is part of the secret sauce of what makes an event like that work so well. So with all of your unique experiences influencing how you approach the table, each GM is so varied in their own expertise and skill set and what they bring. And that was part of the delight of getting that small little sampling of the rotating GMs. When bringing these GMs together for this event, how did you assemble and decide upon who to include in your production team? Were you reaching out to them? Were they reaching out to you? Was it a mix of both? How did those connections form? And what is important to you to look for in who you bring to the table as a GM?
That's a great question. And some of my GMs are a funny story, but like a couple of them are, we have mutual friends. And so the first year I was kind of putting this together and I needed DMs and I was in more of a very small community and I hadn't started, well, I think I had just started running at cons, but I didn't know anyone well enough to ask. And con jams are incredible because they're so flexible. And another skill they have are timed tables. In our home games, we don't have to make sure that we hit the beats by 2 o'clock or like get to a satisfying ending by 2 o'clock. And even, you know, the party may take you on a completely different course that's not scripted and you still need to get to a satisfying ending at 2 o'clock. And so that was something that I really look for is one, like, people with either professional backgrounds who have done this for a long time before or people who have run timed tables. And that could be at a con. It could be at another event like this. You have your D&D in the castles. There's D&D on a, I don't know what it's called, but there's a river cruise one now. There's an actual cruise. There's a lot of places that do D&D vacation events. And so that is a nice place that I look to, as well as like people I personally know or that I have experienced DM. Honestly, two of my DMs, so funny, Zach and Aliam, who are like my go-to regulars now, they were both random emails. They emailed me. Aliam actually, I think, was like, do you need a photographer? I was like, no, I need a DM. And he's like, I DM. And I was like, let me see. And so we kind of like chatted. I chatted with both of them and we talked about their philosophies of the game and what is important to them in a game and how do they want to make their players feel and are they a flexible DM? Because there are some DMs that will not change from prep. And that is maybe good at some tables and not good at other tables. And that just does not work for me because we just, there's a lot of factors that go into a camp weekend and things can happen. And our first year, it's so funny, there were a couple NPCs that were popping in and out of people's adventures. And one of our DMs goes, hey, by the way, we have a Discord channel for just the DMs. And they're like, hey, they killed this one. And we're like, okay, noted. All right. So she's gone. So she won't be appearing in any of your stuff anymore. Don't like, it, you know, it's not going to break a wall. It just broke a table. And we're like, okay, noted. Cool. Moving on. Like totally fine with us. We can manage without her. But those are all things I look for in DMs, like the flexibility and you know, the improv chops, because these are strangers. These are people that, you know, you were only just meeting and becoming friends with. So you need to be comfortable and all of that stuff, like off the get-go. And to throw in another improv principle is making your partner look good. Like this is their story, making sure that you're really highlighting and you're showcasing everyone at the table. And, you know, I have one of my players this year was so quiet, literally so quiet. I had to really, really use my full ears to hear. And sometimes they don't speak up as much either. And when you like, you need to spotlight them, because when you do, oh my God, the things this person would say were incredible. Like one of the smartest, most creative players I have ever had at my table. And every time I spotlight them, I was like, I just wish that you spoke nonstop. Everything you're saying is just like, it's incredible. And so, yeah, picking DMs is, it's so important because, you know, every table is so different. And then I also try to place people with DMs I think they would like based on the very little I know about them from the registration forms. But, you know, every DM has their own style and every DM specializes in different things. And some kind of are a jack of all trades, but some, you know, really they're that combat DM and they're so good at combat. And some are like, please give me silly voices. Please let me do like crazy things. And so it's really nice to have DMs that either, you know, have all different skills or can really kind of capture all skills at once.
Yeah, the variety in the backgrounds and skill sets, I think, is such a good advantage in, like you said, both the specialization and the versatility of it. For something like this, what you were talking about with your shy player makes me think of a thing that I was chatting about in one of my previous interviews with Ty, who is the host and GM of the Actual Play podcast Side Character Quest. It is a one player, one GM anthology show. And one of the things that he brought up with that was it's fascinating to see how different players respond in different settings and scenarios. And a thing that he's found to be true is that a lot of shyer or quieter players, when put on the spot in that kind of situation, when they can't hide behind a larger party, will tend to surprise him with how proactive they are, with how much they have to say. So giving appropriate set pieces for players like that to shine, especially when compared to more boisterous players at the table, it's a real skill that does take a lot to try to hone in on. So it's great that that is such a good focus and that that is such an important thing to look for in the GMs that you get, in being able to appropriately highlight a huge variety of players. And with them being strangers, I really admire GMs who run events with unknown tables, just because the versatility of who you're going to get is such a curveball that it's always impressive to me.
I love my GMs. They're so talented. And I chose my table in the back corner so I could see everyone, because, you know, you see them getting up and they're making these huge gestures. And I'm like, oh, I wish I could be at that table right now. They look so fun. And then another thing, like, I think this goes without saying, but it really should be said, but it's like all of my DMs also must be more than tolerant, but like loving and accepting of every kind of person. This community is so diverse and we get a lot of diversity at camp. And without question, it is their community. They belong here. They are loved here. They're celebrated and supported here. And so that, of course, it's a given to me, but I know it's not to everybody. So it is important to be said.
That's a good point. And that really is something that we shouldn't take for granted. It's unfortunate how much hostility still exists in the space, but the fact that more accepting tables do exist and that it's easier to find and access them than it ever has been before really is a testament to how far the hobby's come from being such a niche and fringe thing when it was first on the scene. It's a very important thing to get right, and I'm glad that that is such a priority, and it really comes across and is felt. The huge range in people that were there of people who had played original first edition D&D in the 80s, people that are brand new to the game, people that have all wide range of experiences, for everybody to kind of come together around this one shared central thing. And with it being so accommodating, I do like that even though the physical camp aspects of it are a fun component of the game, the fact that you had the accessibility considerations of every event being optional for people to tag in and out of if they either weren't comfortable doing an activity or were not physically able to do so, I think that was a big important thing. And with there being a wide variety in the types of events that were happening, I think it was very well considered.
Yeah, that is a huge consideration because we completely get all kinds of people. I know everybody can't run. You just don't really know what's going to happen before camp. And so I do want those activities to be completely spread out. Some won't be your bag, but some really will. Some are random. Some, you know, and I will say, I think I said this at camp, but I will give Survivor a lot of credit for that because I watched a lot of Survivor going into this because I think their relays do a good job of spreading out the talent. It 100% does lean more physical and Survivor and also a lot grosser. And we don't have time to take five showers in the middle of the day. So like, we're not doing mud, but they always have that like puzzle element. They always have something that's more like brain-based, something that's more, you know, rearranging the tiles to make a word and figuring that out. So like, it is very important if we're doing something physical to have something that is not, and maybe you're not a puzzle person. So there needs to be something that is for you too. There needs to be something for everybody so that everyone, again, can kind of feel like a hero in this camp. And there also needs to be the things that you're not good at. You do need to be challenged in some way. You came to summer camp. You're already putting yourself out there. Like, now it's time to do it. You know, I don't know when the last time you did a potato sack race was, but you might not have one again. Not to sound ominous, but I mean, just like put yourself out there and do it now. We had actually both weekends, we had somebody who was a little scared of the zip line. It's high, dude. It's like high up there. It goes fast. I mean, you're harnessed in, it's completely safe, but that logic does not really work in these situations when it's a fear and a phobia. And to both of them, I said, okay, just make me a deal. We're like in the tavern right now, or like we're in like the guild hall, we're around the table and they've decided they're not doing the zip line. And I was like, just make me a deal. Come with us, put your harness on, go to the top and then decide. You can turn around. You can take your harness back off. You don't need to do it. I just want you to put the harness on and just look, because you don't really know, right? Like, you're here to challenge yourself and put yourself out there and go outside of your comfort zone. And you're the only person who can do that for you. No one is going to do it for you. You have to take that step yourself. And so both people put the harness on. It's all I wanted. They put the harness on. They walked up to the top. And then one was like, yeah, I can do this. I'm going to go. And they did it. And it was this year, it was a zipline racer. And so we were keeping score and, you know, you could tag out and have someone else race for you. No big deal at all. Like, it's totally fine. Well, the first person went and won and they were so proud of themselves and they're like, and I won, and they would have never done this otherwise. And the second person, it was much harder for them to take that leap. She asked me to push her off because she couldn't lift her feet up. She couldn't take them off the platform. And she was like, push me. Do it. Push me. And I was like, all right, are you sure? Are you sure? And she's like, push me. And I was like, okay, all right, we're doing this. And so I push her. I mean, it was like a very gentle, you know, just very gently moved her off the platform and the zip line spins and I can see her eyes are full of fear. And I was like, oh, what have I done? And then she gets to the end and she wins. And oh my, she's just beaming afterwards. She's like calling her mom. She's like, I can't believe I did this. She was like, that was terrifying. I'm never doing it again. I can't believe I did it. Like, she was so excited. I think the camp was so excited for her. Like, news got around. We know who this is. Like, what an incredible moment for her that, like, going into camp, she knew there was zipline and she knew she was not going on that thing. And I was like, oh, what a beautiful moment for her. What a triumph.
That's so heartwarming.
So nice.
And to us, a less extreme extent. I know there was a similar thing for like the field day type activities that we were doing. Within my particular party, we were going into that pretty wiped already from how the week had been. And so there was a lot of like, oh, do we have to do this now? Can we take a nap first? And like, okay, I guess if we have to. And then by the end of it, the general sense and vibe was, okay, that was pretty fun. I haven't done something like that since school, and it was really fun to be able to, like, kind of jump back into that. That was, I had a better time than I anticipated I would.
I think it's such an adult thing to, like, no, I don't know. I don't need to do a relay. Pass. It's your lizard brain telling you, like, keep yourself safe. Don't do it. Don't embarrass yourself. And as soon as you just decide to say yes, and commit, like, we know, you know, the DMs, the NPCs, we know, like, people's competitive sides, they turn on. They're going to do this thing because it's not just doing it to do it. What you do at camp affects what happens in the game. You got to get that advantage. And people go for it. And I'm so glad they do because it really looks so rewarding.
That opportunity for people to step outside of their comfort zone is so important. And it is such an encouraging thing to see the pride that people take when they can push themselves to do so.
Yeah, it's so fun to watch. And it's fun to host. Someone was like really egging me on this. You're like, you get in here, you compete. And I was like, you don't want me to compete. You want to know how long I've thought about these challenges, what my strategies would be. I was like, you don't want that.
On the topic of being outside of your comfort zone and diving into an unexpected challenge, that's kind of what the entire venture of Dungeons and Cabins was for you, from the sound of it. What advice would you give to somebody trying to start a venture like yours? And is there any information you know now that you wish you knew when you started?
This is going to sound crazy, but in all sincerity, don't. And I say that so specifically because camp feels like me. This feels exactly like Sammy. Like, I smell that in every corner of camp. I see it in every part of the adventure and every kind of bracelet that was made. It just, to me, this just feels like me expanding into the universe. I have left my body and now, like, you see kind of the trails leaving. If you do want to do something, freaking do it. Just, it needs to be you. Like, it needs to be exactly how you would do it. It needs to feel like you. It needs to come from your soul. It needs to just needs to reek of you-ness. And so whatever that is, do exactly that. And before camp every year, which has only been twice so far, but I'll probably do it every year, is I watch the Lego movie. Have you seen that?
Yes. That's an interesting inspiration point, mm-hmm. But I get exactly what you mean.
It's just, he couldn't have been the special if he wasn't exactly who he is. He needs to just only be him, and that is right. He's like, oh, what if they don't like this? What if they don't? I can only do what I'm going to do. And so you can only do what you are going to do. And that is how I would approach a venture of doing something how you're going to do it. Just be your own version, like literally your own version of Emmett, and just do your thing. And then just trust yourself. You know you want this thing and you know you're going to do it. So just do it. Just trust yourself and do it the way you want to do it. Less doubt, more do.
That is fantastic advice. And that's a common thread that I've found in the interviews that I've done, is two of the most important things for doing any kind of creative venture, regardless of the scale, is sincerity and persistence.
100%. Passion and tenacity. Like, if this isn't going to light your fire, then find something that does. Like, if you're doing something at a big scale, it is going to take a lot of time. It's going to take big time. So make sure that it's worth it for you. For me, camp is worth it. Like, the feeling going into camp, the feeling leaving camp, the feeling thinking about camp, it's an irreplaceable warmth.
It really is a very unique thing. And there's, even among things that you enjoy doing and that you think you want to make a venture, having the passion for what you're doing is so critical. Before I started D&D Dark, I spent about a year trying to get a YouTube channel off the ground and just kind of dipping my toe in that as a thing of, like, I want to give this a sincere try and effort. This seems like a thing I would enjoy doing. And over the course of about a year, I was starting to hit the pressure points of the sacrifices that need to be made to do any kind of creative venture like that. And the passion was kind of leaving me. And I started doing D&D Dark around that time. And it was going to be just a small side venture before I jumped back into focusing on the video series that I was doing. And I immediately felt a night and day difference when I started doing the podcast, that oh no, I enjoy doing this so much more than I've enjoyed any aspect of this previous venture. And I learned from doing the thing that I enjoy that I don't have the passion for this that is needed to sustain this. And I want to focus and put my efforts on where I'm getting the rewards. That being said, D&D Dark has been a very difficult venture. As of this recording, we have been going for 3 years.
Wow.
That's both a long time and not very much at all. And not all of it has been fun, but it's always been fulfilling and rewarding. And consistently, as I've been going through and doing the show, it's never been a doubt in my mind that this show is the thing that I have a passion for doing. So finding something like that is very important, and having that passion can really carry you through the days where there's a Brian David Gilbert quote where he talked about how there's kind of an inherent nonsense in the phrase, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. It was in regards to him talking about Unraveled, where he said, like, yeah, I love everything I do and I've worked some days. The passion has to carry you through the hard parts. It doesn't make them go away, but it makes them worth the effort and struggle.
Yes, so relatable, so well said. Yeah, exactly. It's like trusting your gut. What feels right? Like some things it feels maybe obligatory where you're like, I just feel like I'm supposed to do this. Like for me a long time ago, this is so unrelated, but it was like running. I feel like I'm supposed to run as a former athlete. Like that's how you stay in shape. And it's like, no, there's like a million things you can do. You don't have to do that thing that's just like really not calling to you. You don't have to do that.
Yeah, it's, I have a lot of respect and admiration for people who have the tenacity to stick through and commit to the ventures that they love. And there's similarly, like hearing that kind of advice in a different form. There's a video that I saw the other day of somebody bringing up the point that you have less competition than you think you do if you can have the persistence to tough it out.
I literally just heard that quote and I was like, yeah, like it like reinvigorated. I was like, I can finish it. Like, oh yeah, like it's easier. This is going to be so much easier.
Yeah, because any market that you're in a creative venture will be flooded, but it will be flooded by people who probably won't go the distance. So if you can stick to it and if you can commit to it and put in the proper passion and effort, the people who aren't willing to do that will fall off bit by bit. And the actual competition that you have of people willing to do that is markedly smaller than you would ever think it is.
Well, and you can narrow that down even more because you're the only one who's going to do it the way you do it. There are thousands of horror movies, but no two are identical unless there's a lawsuit I don't know about, which I'm sure there is. But like, you're the only one who's going to do it how you do it. So you can do the same type of, I mean, you know, like there are other D&D podcasts, but you're the only person who's going to make it like you do. And so in a sense, you also have no competition. You're doing exactly what you do.
Absolutely. With that, that pretty much comes to the end of my questions. I want to make sure before we wrap up, though, are there any other miscellaneous things, any topics, bits of lingering wisdom, anything that you want to make sure doesn't get left unsaid?
Oh, man. I think whatever you're doing in tabletop, this is kind of just like for anyone, think about what type of table you like to be at and then find that table. Not every table is for every person, and that is a good thing because that means there's a table just for you. This community is so big and so welcoming that know that there is space for you.
Phenomenal note to end on. Thank you again for sitting down and chatting with me. This has been incredible. As we wrap up, can you remind our listeners one more time where they can find you and information about yourself and Dungeons and Cabins?
Oh, 100%. You can find me personally on Instagram at Glickity, G-L-I-C-K-I-T-Y. I'll post there about my improv shows and about Dungeons and Cabins and just random life stuff. And then Dungeons and Cabins is Dungeons and Cabins on Instagram and .com. I would say join our mailing list. You have to check the box. The box is saying I can email you. If you don't check the box, I cannot email you. So sign up for the mailing list, check the box, and you'll be one of the first to find out when the new camp season is, and you will find out before everyone else.
All right. Excellent. Thank you again for all of that. All of those links will be in the description. And thank you, all of you, for listening. One more time, everybody. I'm Danger Dangers, the GM and host of D&D Dark. I've been chatting with Sammy Glicker, the creator of Dungeons & Cabins. And this has been Table Talk. And I hope you enjoyed what we brought to the table. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Table Talk, created, hosted, and edited by myself, Danger Dan Jurs, with artwork by Jordan Nelson. Our guest this episode was Sammy Glicker. Links to her work can be found in the episode description. If you're interested in being a guest on this show, reach out to us at dndarkpodcast@gmail.com. Our theme song and outro was created by Jeremy Vellucci. Check out more of his works on Instagram at @JeremyVellucci_wreckoftime. Thanks again for listening. And we'll see you next time we have a guest take a seat at the table.
Hello and welcome to Super Stryford Regency Rangers, a comedy action adventure loosely based on Sentient Sensibility by 9th Level Games and starring some of Stratford's most colorful creatures.
You may call me Adrian Alucard Depeche. If you know what my father did, it could be bad.
Looking matronly with her face hidden behind a fan stands the Kuchisake Ona. Doesn't everyone think she's beautiful?
My name is Sir Gordon Topham Hatt. Pleasure to meet you. I like to make stuff go boom.
My name is Richard Milo Renfield.
He's back.
No, he's just still like that. Oh, God.
Hi, I'm Jordan, and I play Frederick the Loafer.
My God, is this the dude that was like... in that one episode of D&D Dark?
It is the deepest cut of inside jokes that could be made.
Are you married, miss?
I am not married.
Kuchisake leans immediately to the group, just pulls a quick huddle. We need to get this trollop out of this fucking town.
We go fight?
I meet you at dawn tomorrow morning.
It's... date.
I hope to find love like that someday.
She says that I hit her. I did not hit her. It's not bullshit. I did not. And as you're walking, he just keeps following you.
Oh, God. I believe I have made an unfortunate ally.
On his hips are two pistols. On his back are two rifles. And on his chest, a triple barrel shotgun.
Oh, my God.
I will destroy all of you and destroy this town.
D&D Dark presents Super Stratford Regency Rangers, premiering Wednesday, May 27th, only on patreon.com/DNDarkPodcast.